Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Podcast Assemble, the show where you come for your rambling geeky download. My name's Tommy, and I am delighted, as always, to be joined by my friend and co-host from across the pond. It's our resident unstoppable killing machine of the pod, DL. How are you?
Hello!
You should be like, I am okay.
Yeah.
I am well.
I don't know
why you're the Terminator.
Was that Terminator or was that Javier?
Somewhere in the middle.
I feel like you'd be,
a little column A.
Be scarier if you had like a Barcelona lisp.
The Terminator?
No. No, whatever this guy's name is.
From, give me your cloth.
From our main topic. What was his name? Sugar?
Chagrin. Or was it Sugar? I don't know.
I'm looking it up. Javier Bardem in the main topic this week, which... Getting ahead of ourselves.
Is No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, no country for old men. Lots of young men in this country.
Lots of
many.
Interestingly, is an Oscar-winning film.
Multiple
Oscar-winning films. To my chagrin.
To your great dismay? No, to your great surprise.
That's a surprise. Midway through. It's an Oscar-baity film. It's so baity.
Oh, it's not even baity. It's a good movie.
It's so baity.
It's a good movie.
It's Christian Bateman. It's how much of a film it is.
It is. Dude, a Beatty Oscar film is these boring ass ones. This is not boring.
Yeah.
There's multiple things going on.
We'll be talking about that, won't we, as we go through. Yeah. But did you see any of the Oscars from 2024?
No.
I did.
This year, I thought you were going to say from when this came out, which was.
Which was just this.
You know, we should look that up as well. Maybe we'll do that to compare.
Did you see The Fall? The Fall that shocked the universe.
The Fall.
So some actor was on the red carpet and she tripped on her dress.
Oh,
and apparently, like, it's everywhere. Well, it's never going away.
That's one way to get famous.
Yeah,
you can either slap someone, slapped, or go out naked.
Or make Joe Rogan talk
John
about
Cena?
You. Yeah, did you see that?
He was bucket ass naked.
Do you think he was fully naked?
He had a little cup.
I was going to say, I bet he had a little cup.
A little cup. But he looked pretty good for his age, I must say.
I mean, he's a
steroids,
wrestler.
Dude.
He's a big boy.
Good things.
He never did them.
Yeah.
You listen to him on any podcast.
Really? Is that what he says?
Yeah.
That's
every time.
Fucking lie.
Unbelievable.
What do we think about the Oscars? How do we feel about?
I think they're like so outdated. Unreal.
For sure. But I meant like the results.
Barbie didn't even get like a nod for half of the shit. And that, my friend, was the best film of the year. Thank you, Podcast Assemble. Go back, check our episode out.
I do think that it should have won Best Picture and it did not.
Ooh.
Best Director. I can understand why Nolan gets that.
Oh, I don't know, actually. I just think it was so... Right, okay. I think that we were talking briefly about this before we came here. But the way I viewed this is Barbie left a bigger impression on me than Oppenheimer did. By this point, it's almost like a career achievement award for Chris Nolan.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
So
it's kind of like Leo's.
Yeah,
like Leo won for, what was it? The Revenant?
The one where he was in The Bear.
Which was like, it was a good acting performance. But honestly, Tom Hardy stole that film.
Yeah.
Like,
way
so
better.
It's like, but he had a couple other ones that he probably should have won for or had like been, he'd nominated so many times and lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like they gave it to him.
Ah!
But I don't know. I could see the argument for best director because I think like some of the stuff he does in that movie directing wise is probably harder
amazing.
Than Barbie.
Sure.
But overall, I think Barbie, I agree, better film.
I think the message and the overall way it's created, I think Barbie for me just left a better impression.
Yeah.
And we talked about this on our episode where
we
talked about our best and worst of 2023. And I do think it's interesting that Emma Stone won for, what was it, Poor Things, I think it's called?
Did not
she won
watch
best
it.
Best actor. Or best actress. I don't know
did
which one's
Did not watch
her.
It. Haven't Emma Stone kind of bugs me.
Ooh, interesting.
But good for her.
I mean, doesn't she play like... So I believe the point of this film is that she plays grown up with the mind of a child. And she still has sex with a lot of people. Which I find really strange.
That is an intriguing topic that I just don't care that much about. Does that make sense? Like, I understand why it was made. I understand why people watch it, but like, is that going to be the first one? Like, no.
Well,
I'll tell you what, The Boy and the Heron's much higher on my list of things to watch that I haven't watched.
I feel like it's got like a Tim Burton-esqueness to it. You know, it's that gothic-y feel that I can see why the Academy loved it.
Yeah.
But they're all so out of date, man. They keep, like, I was watching a really interesting video about Brokeback Mountain and the time it didn't win to Crash. Now, Crash famously, like at the time, was this really ham-fisted view on society that was like...
Good movie, but a bit over the top.
Right. Yeah. Over-dramatized.
Yeah.
Was clearly Oscar-baity. And like, nobody even talks about it anymore. Whereas Brokeback Mountain is so still in our like zeitgeist.
I still haven't seen Brokeback Mountain.
Really?
But I think, is it in the zeitgeist because Heath died and Jake Gyllenhaal has ascended?
No, I think it's because it's like, just
you know
such
what I mean?
A good movie.
Like, I actually didn't mind Crash, but I agree. It was almost like soap opera level of dramatization.
Yes,
like 100%. How, like, oh, it all comes together like 100%. This. You know what I mean? Like, I get that.
We should put that on one of our lists, Brokeback.
Yeah.
I feel like that's...
Can we watch it together?
Hugging?
Naked?
If you really want. Hey, man, it's 2024. You have a cinema experience you want to have.
Can we watch it together, take a CLS and wear sweatpants and just see what happens?
Are our partners going to be there at the same
time?
Well,
like, maybe just to, like, just to really test ourselves.
Wow, okay, all right. Are they going to be in the gimp suits we were talking about earlier?
Oh, my God. This, I don't know where I went with this.
So, just for context, my partner didn't know what a gimp suit was. That is the most awkward conversation I've had in a little while.
Was it?
Just because she didn't understand what we were trying to explain.
I dove right in.
It was fucking hilarious.
I didn't try anything.
I was like, there's a butt plug involved. There's a... we don't normally get this weird, guys. In fact, you know what? That's 2 weeks in a row I've said that. But if anyone does want to skip around, there will be time codes in the description, as always, supplied by friend of the show and editing genius, Mr. Matthew Bliss of blissery.fm or whatever he is now. We'll give you his details at the end of the podcast. But DL.
Yes.
Let me ask you one question before we get moving on.
Yes.
If you could give this podcast 1 to 5 Oscars, how many Oscars would you give the podcast?
I would give 5 Oscars to this podcast. I would take one away from Robert Downey Jr. for best supporting actor.
So we get 6?
So we get 6, actually, because I'm taking one of his.
Brilliant. Look, guys, if you give us 5 stars on the podcast capture you're listening on, that'd be fantastic. You can do it right there while you're listening to us. If you find any of this fun, any of this interesting, helps with algorithms, all the stuff we don't truly understand. DL.
Yes.
What have you been up to this week, buddy? What's been
this week, man? It's been an interesting week. I was doing a lot of French.
Oh,
so I was
La Francais.
Yes.
You promised me you'd do the whole episode in French.
The whole episode. I don't know about that. Je vais parler un petit français.
It's going to be a really slow episode,
complet il dit before. I don't know how to say before. It's getting better. Okay. I'm able to say, right now, I could say, what are we doing right now? I could say it in French. We are, I'll save this for
please
later.
Please don't say it in French.
We'll stop. But no, what have I been up to? I finished that The Dark Ages overall. Book, it's the 6th book in the Red Rising series.
Okay, right, so we're talking about Red Rising again. Cool.
Fifth Red Rising.
This is a running joke. I really still don't care about
it's 800 pages long, dude. It took me a while. It's finished. I'll tell you, overall draining, but fucking great.
Okay.
I mean, really great. Let's just say you don't call a book Dark Ages because it's happy. This one,
yeah, right.
This is the one, you know, every story, it's darkest before the dawn moment.
Yep.
This book really epitomizes that
really?
In name
wow.
and in action. I'll leave it at that.
So he's getting shit on, basically.
I don't know who this he is.
Oh, wow. Now you're pretending like you don't know.
I don't know who this he is. I'll follow it up. I'll leave it at that. I'll be quick, but have you progressed any further in my...
I have been so busy this week. You can probably tell by the huskiness of my voice that I've been doing a lot of customer entertaining this
That's
week,
why
shall
I'm
we
always
say.
Husky. That's why I'm always husky.
Well, now you're not. Yeah. Now you're having a great time.
Now I'm improving. the real deal is I've been watching a bit of Shogun. I'm on episode 3.
Great. Well, there's 3 or 4 episodes out.
There's 4.
Okay, all right. It's all Japanese.
So when
isn't
I
it?
Saw that, it's not all Japanese.
Okay.
Oddly, when they speak Portuguese, because that's the common language between the characters,
right?
Because it's set in that time period. When they speak Portuguese, everyone they speak English.
Okay.
But you realize that it's Portuguese because they very much say this person speaks Portuguese. This is the only language, and so they're just like doing something. So it's
they
not.
Do a really bad accent. They go full Robert Downey Jr.
No, they just speak English. They're just like English is Portuguese. Then you say I agree.
Understood. Yeah.
Narrator.
Bien.
So it's good. I don't usually like historical fiction unless it's a Western.
Okay. The irony.
Yes, I'm enjoying it.
Okay.
I am enjoying it.
It's got like a 10 out of 10 everywhere. I'm so excited.
When I saw 4 episodes, I was like, is that the total number?
No, I think it's like 8 or 10.
And they released like... Oh.
It's releasing weekly.
Okay. So I'm just behind. All right. Sweet. I got 2
no,
more.
No, as in like, I think you've... Yeah, like you've yeah, got, you're almost up to date. We're behind. We've not even started yet.
Yeah. It's so far, it's good. It's long, but it's good. It's a bit slow, but the actors are good. So I'm intrigued. Like there's nothing crazy that's happened yet. It's pretty slow.
I do love
so like the
cast.
Whole 10 thing, I'm like, how was it a 10?
Okay. Is that like...
Because IGN gave it a 10, right?
A lot of people giving it
so far. I'm like, okay, like something big needs to happen next episode because, like, I am intrigued. I like things going slow, but I'm like,
getting on a limb here. I'm going to assume that they've seen more of it than you have.
They've seen probably the entire thing.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, pick up the pace.
What are they building towards?
Yeah, pick up the pace.
Is there any like hint at what they're building towards? Like a big battle?
Yeah, there's gonna be a bunch of
showdown.
Like somebody like. There hasn't been a shogun in like, which is like a absolute military leader. There's more to it. I think they're going to explain eventually in quite a while. And the like tables are kind of setting for like a civil war.
Ooh, interesting.
So there's going to be some stuff going down.
That sounds very you. I can't believe you're not.
No, I'm liking it. It's just very, very slow. So okay. Far.
All right. I did some cool stuff this week. What did you get up to, bud? One thing we just finished yesterday, I'm not going to talk about, but we watched a thing, and this was such a random pick. You know when Netflix just throws something weird at you and you're like, fuck yeah, right, I'll watch it, why not? This was called Lover, Stalker, Killer. It was like a docudrama thing where...
Oh, Gail's watching this with the English birds?
No. It's like this kind of hick American town where this dude, he becomes single. And he's just moved there so he can be around his kids and his ex-wife. You know, he can still be in part of the family, which I very much respect. But it's sort of circa early 2000s. So there's no, you know, proper dating apps at the time. So he jumps directly into Plenty of Fish. Do you remember Plenty of Fish? Is that a reference people still understand?
It's like a website.
It was a website, yeah. My brother introduced me to it when I was significantly younger, and it was banter. It was great. It was hilarious. Yeah. So this dude, like, he strikes up a couple of relationships. He's like chatting to one, and then there's another one on the scene, and he's just, you know, he's just playing field. He's just a single dude.
Creating a roster.
And then one of them disappears, and it's this whole story about, like, effectively, he gets closer to the other one because she's now scared that she's getting targeted, and there's, like, a stalker involved who's messaging her all this stuff. The stalker's messaging him. It's now messaging the ex-wife. It's this big crescendo of like nonsense and like, oh man, it's actually kind of, it was really quite good. Like, if it wasn't Netflix and they didn't drag it out for like four times longer than it needed to.
Should I watch it or not?
I would say if you're in the mood for switching your brain off, give it a go.
Yeah. My brain is always active.
Your brain is so on right now. You're so on.
I've got so much extra capacity. There's a lot of GPUs sitting back.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Okay. I need dance down. I'm reading a fucking book on the dangers of AI right now.
Yeah, I can.
It's like
believe
a, it's
that.
Literally like a book that they teach in school. So yeah, I'm maybe I need to chill. Maybe okay. I'll give it a look.
Well, all right. Okay. So like, if you do want to switch your brain off at any point, I'd say it's good hick watching.
Okay.
Anything else you went up to?
Hick watching. No, what I literally have been reading that book about AI. It's like, how do we put protections of, like, if we don't, what could happen and why? And if we do, okay, what kind of protections should we put in place? I'm actually not reading it because I give a fuck. Like, I'll be long dead, hopefully, before the Terminator happens. But it's more, I want to use it as inspiration for the story I'm trying to write about, sure, how AI kind of twists and changes civilization.
You could make a Western with AI stuff.
So I'm trying to basically...
Make Westworld.
I'm trying to basically use this as inspiration for plot points.
Okay.
Yeah. So far, I've had a couple. It's actually been useful.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I can't wait to read the first draft of your novella.
Dude, that's so far
away.
Have
you started writing yet?
Yeah. I've wrote, but like, I'm writing more of the Western one because that's easier because it's one point of view.
Okay.
But this one is going to have more. And I want to do like two timelines. So it's like very complicated.
So what's your process? Do you write the way George R. R. Martin does? And he writes just the character might, he thinks a character would do in that situation?
I'm trying to come up with an outline for like a couple core things. And then I just write. But when you write a character, like, there's a lot of classes say, like, when you write a character, you're supposed to just let it flow. Like, you don't want to have you want to have a feeling in mind, but not necessarily in, like, to put them in the perspective, the frame of the character, a feeling and a goal, but not necessarily for every time you write a scene, not like, oh, I need to get to this destination now. Like, otherwise it feels forced. Like, it doesn't actually feel like it's a realized character. So, no, it's a bit of both, but. Like, who am I to judge George? I mean, if he could finish a fucking series, he'd be an all-time.
If he could ever finish.
He'd be the GOAT.
I reckon he's nearly finished. I reckon he's tinkering at this point.
Fuck, I hope so.
Like, surely
I'm about
he has
to finish Red Rising. What am I going to do?
Desperately need something. Yeah. I reckon it'll just drop out of nowhere and it'll just be like an overnight
Well, at this
success.
Point, anything is no out of nowhere.
Yeah,
true. Because people don't believe it's going to happen.
My favorite thing is when he comes out with, like, he's going to work on, like, a side project and everyone's like, fucking no!
He doesn't
like
anymore.
Explode.
He actually shuts the fuck up about it. Yeah, because he's
no shit.
Every now and again, and it's been a while, I Google Winds of Winter update. Let's do it.
Let's do it right now.
In real time.
While you're doing that.
I'm trudging along, three-fourths through. It's the same update from fucking a year ago.
While you're doing that, I ironically, speaking of George R. R. Martin, I've been jumping back into Elden Ring, because there was an update that in June this year there is a massive DLC coming.
George R. R. Martin,
I've forgotten how amazing that game was. Go on.
Yes, George R. R. Martin has more bad news about Winds of Winter. Fucking dude.
Oh, the irony.
Keep going.
You go. What's it say?
It says, I'm not sure. This is an article. Give me 2 seconds.
Chuck it into Gemini and have Gemini make it give you like the top level summary.
Last year, Martin said if he's finished 1,100, 1,200 pages of Winds and had a few hundred more to go, said he has finished. So I did the math. I ran the numbers. You can click the link and see how I ran the numbers. This is basically Forbes. I'll give credit later. But basically, I concluded if Martin continues to write at the pace he's been writing and has this many more pages left, we're looking at best case scenario, 3.8 years more. Worst case scenario, 5.18 years from today.
Bloody
for
hell.
The end of Winds of Winter.
Well, like, good luck with that.
It's not even news. That's good just some guy that, literally creating an algorithm to figure this out.
I shall stick by my original theory that he's already finished it. It's in the bag and it's just sat in a vault somewhere and it's going to drop when he dies. It's going to happen. I'm telling you now, it's going to happen. You can be as angry as you want.
I wish you were.
If you could see his face.
I wish
anger
you were right.
Everywhere.
I mean, it's just like a childish take, but I wish you were right. I would, because that would mean I'd for sure get it. I would, like, you know, as long as I outlast George R.R. Martin in my lifespan.
Surely can't be that
I
hard.
Hope so.
Like, man looks like diabetes reincarnate, unfortunately. I did one other cool thing. Oh, so do you recommend reading this book on AI?
Oh, like, no. If you, like,
if
for,
you
the
don't
average,
want to be
for the average person, no. It's like very, like, scholastic.
Okay.
Like, they're using, like, terms that I don't understand. I have to look up.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like, all sorts of theorems and shit. And I have to, like, slow down. It's taking me a while. But it's a good, like, I told myself I have to finish this one before I start the next Red Rising one.
Because oh,
I want to, like, make, you know, switch up the palette. Yeah.
And then it'll be releasing with
yeah, hopefully.
I did one other cool thing that I would highly recommend. So we actually went to an art exhibition. So I'd never heard of this. Apparently it's super famous. Hit us up if you have heard of it at Pocket Assemble on Instagram. We went to the Biennale. Now, have you ever heard of this? So apparently it's every 2 years, they put on one of these art exhibitions. It does a lot of local arts, a lot of local artworks, artists and artworks. And effectively it's like a curated overview of some of the most current and up-to-date artworks from that area. And they do it around the world. They do it in Paris. This year it was done in Sydney and it was done in like an old factory. Mm. It was so hipster, but it was so awesome. That there was like cool music. There was like local art, like what are they called? Where you do like interpretive dances. But there were like there was a really deep indigenous theme to it, which I was really enjoyed.
Very nice.
And you know this about me, but listeners probably don't. I did fine arts my degree, so I actually have a bit of an art background. I don't use it, haven't done since I did, but I am really into abstract art and art that speaks to me and a message, and you might get that through some of my YouTube videos. Like, I like to talk about the message of things and how if something affects me, I really, really like take it in and like it projects into my brain and stays there.
It's your soul.
It's my soul. Yeah. But yeah, Biennale, it was insane. In fact, almost more interesting was the setting. So it was in this big old factory and it was like just desolate. It's been left there for years and years and years. And just fascinating. Like, you walk around, you're like, holy shit, this basically created all the electricity for this entire city at one time.
Wow. You
so cool.
Really, really backhanded compliment to the art there. I really enjoyed it, but like mostly I was looking at the walls. Yes.
That voltage meter is really interesting.
Mostly I looked at the archaic electricity vaults. Like,
don't put it in such an interesting setting.
The switchboard was fucking inspiring.
There was one moment, and this is really, you'll like this. So there was some guys who all had like harnesses on, and they were all walking around.
Mm.
And my partner and her two friends who we'd gone with were absolutely sure that they were about to do like a, I don't know, like a paracel, whatever it is, down like from the upper floor all the way down to the ground floor, or do something cool, like some sort of art project where they're like hanging and they're like, you know, like,
good bet.
The harnesses are there for a reason. We stood there for like 15 fucking minutes waiting for them to do something. They weren't. They were just to connect their cameras to so they could walk around and take pictures of the event. I was like,
that's an L.
It was,
but I'm not going to lie, like, I probably would have been like, yeah, surely.
We'll wait, guys. Yeah. We'll wait. Nah, it was absolutely fucking nothing. Hey, guys, if there's anything that you recommend we watch, I definitely recommend going and checking out the Biennale. If it's still on near you, check it out. It's fantastic. Really awesome indigenous show in Sydney, if that's what you're into. let us know. You can find us at Podcast Assemble on Instagram or thepodcastassemble@gmail.com, or just go to our website, www.podcastassemble.com. All our details are there. You can find us. You can find our stuff. Currently working on a bit of a rebrand of the podcast, so that might go on there soon too. Ooh, woo. It'll be there first, baby. What is it? What did we say? It was memes, news, reviews. Hit us up, baby. DL, do you want to preface our main topic for this week?
It's the main topic theme.
This is another installment of the many movies Tommy should have seen.
But has it.
But has not.
Well, we just found one you should have seen but haven't. Which one? Moment ago in Brokeback Mountain.
That is true. That is true.
So that'll come back around.
We have that one on.
But it is also Oscar week, so we wanted to do something that was Oscar-worthy.
Oscar-worthy and also fit into, you know, the palette of the pod, or at least
also,
one side of the pod.
We are now starting another new anthology, which is Westerns.
Oh, this is its own anthology?
We were talking about this for a while.
I'm in.
It's been building up.
You know, I'm in. There's a little bit of a, like, I bet you there's a large overlap in the Venn diagram of movies Tommy should have seen and movies he hasn't with Westerns.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Like, basically, it's a circle. It's Big not time. Two circles. It's one sphere.
Yeah,
which I can't believe. Dude, I am like one of the weird people that likes Westerns. Like, I don't think they're mass appeal, which leads me to believe, I don't know why I'm writing this book. It's only for me. Really.
Yeah.
It because is I don't think a lot of people are going to read it.
I feel like, but there's a lot I of feel good like it's adaptions. Very Americanized, the Western genre.
Well, it's mostly made about
completely,
the American West.
And the American history. So I feel like there is a strong leaning to folks of your culture enjoying these types of movies and books, which is totally fine.
Yeah. And I feel like there could be Australian Westerns, and there are some.
I like movies where English people go and take over countries. I'm kidding, of course. This, as I mentioned, was an Oscar-winning film, No Country for Old Men, and it beat out the likes of Le'Veon Rose, There Will Be Blood, and my God, it beat Ratatouille.
Wait, it beat out There Will Be Blood?
To the Best Picture, yeah.
That is shocking.
Right?
That's a bad take.
Old Mate won Best Acting Performance, Best Actor, but this won Best Picture.
To be fair, it's not like There Will Be Blood is like a speedy film. They're both very similar.
They're both Oscar-baity.
Yeah, they're both, I don't know about Oscar-baity. They're both Oscar movies.
You're really angry about that.
I don't like the Baity, because Baity implies like, Baity implies you're like twisting the rules to get an outcome.
This is playing towards Oscars. Like everything about it, it's slow, it's precise.
I think it's just artistic. Yeah, I think it's super, super like, it's not like meant to be a blockbuster.
Sure.
That's to me isn't baiting. It's meant to like have a message about a certain.
I didn't think it's
going to
be a blockbuster. Like this isn't a blockbuster film.
For sure.
But before we get too deep into it, DL, we're going to do full spoilers here. But yes. Do you have a stupid plot summary for me?
Yes, I do. We follow Lulin Moss, who stumbles upon a suitcase full of cash in the middle of nowhere. Instead of doing the sensible thing and investing in a 401k, he finds his moral compass at the completely wrong time and returns to the scene of the crime. What he lacks in a high school level linguistics, he makes up for in street smarts, but ultimately the Spanish Grim Reaper gets everybody. Oh, and Woody Harrelson's in the movie, and Tommy Lee Jones loves a Grand Slam breakfast special. That's about it.
Woody Harrelson, man.
What a movie.
What a great like performance. What an interesting choice.
Kind of just like
actor.
Random, though.
Yeah, completely.
Like, as I was doing my dumb summary, I was like, oh, yeah, he's in it. Like
in and out. Yeah. All right, mine is very simply just if Terminator was a Western. That's literally what this movie is, except if you flip out Sarah Connor for Llewellyn. I think we're gonna have different opinions on this, and I quite like that idea of us talking this through, but it's from the Coen brothers. I think this might be our first Coen brothers movie.
Well, they do a lot of Westerns, and we haven't done a lot of Westerns.
We're gonna get there, which is fantastic. Those guys, you know, huge in Hollywood, have been around for many, many years. Obviously, Tommy Lee Jones is in this, Javier Bardem. We're going to talk about Josh Brolin, Woody Harrelson, Kelly MacDonald. It's a pretty awesome cast, even if some of them are slightly ahead of their time. But what I'm going to do for you, DL, is, and I brought it back last week, I'm going to bring it back again. We're back to Goofy IMDb Picture, my friend. Now, for anyone who does not know what Goofy IMDb Picture is, we're not making fun of people's faces. We're not saying this guy's ugly. What we're saying is this.
I feel like I know what it's going to be.
You don't. Trust me. What we're doing is we are saying this is your introduction to the world. So why on earth is this the picture you chose to put on IMDb?
It has to be this one.
So our current MVP has for a little while been Mr. William Fichtner, who is the bank manager in The Dark Knight. You'll remember he looks like he's sucking on a lemon. We've talked about him. If you want to look up his IMDb picture, it's William Fichtner. He is from The Dark Knight. So we have a challenger this week, DL. Now this is or isn't Roger
It has
Boyce,
to be Roger Boyce. Yes.
Who is El Paso Sheriff. Now, the reason I was drawn to this picture is because...
It's a fence?
His picture is just like the inside of an office.
It looks like a fence.
It's in the thumbnail. I of course clicked into it because I had to. I couldn't not click into it. And
it had to be him.
His picture is almost funnier than just the original. So like here, so here's the full picture. So you see, it's an office. He's looking over a... looking over a desk. Now look at that face. Look at the face he's making. How do you explain that?
It's kind of like, damn right. Like, you know what I mean?
He's full of puckering them lips.
Like, okay.
There's not much white.
I feel you.
There's not much white man lip in there.
But the crazy part is the thumbnail just looks like a fence. Like, that's a shocking decision.
You literally
decision.
Can't see him. What an awful decision.
I mean, that has to be whatever.
You think that's going to be this one?
Yes. Woo. It's a fence. It's
ladies and gentlemen, we have a new Goofy IMDb picture.
It's not even wallpaper.
It's not even in it. Roger Boyce.
Roger Boyce. You are
our new Goofy IMDb picture.
You are the king.
What a legend as El Paso Sheriff.
Side note, I really like the movie poster for this.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't
it? It's pretty fucking badass.
Yeah, it's epic.
Yeah.
It's like, it encapsulates the movie in a way.
Pretty well.
Yeah. In a way that it's difficult to really put into words because the creepiness of old mate Javier Bardem in that really matches his character.
Yeah.
It's epic.
And he's like all encompassing, like he's like, which the movie poster.
He's got a big
face. Like a
big drop. Yeah, I get it. He does have a large face.
And a very large nose. The movie poster is just literally his face whitewashed with like the horizon of Josh Brolin's character running away. It's in a small, much smaller image. It's pretty cool.
Do you want to talk to the plot, my man?
Yeah. I mean, at a high level, there's not a lot to it. It's
my brain's really failing here. I want to say something funny and artistic to back to you then about the movie poster, but I was like, I'm so hungover.
No, but it
is. I was like, let's go to the plot, please.
I mean, it looks like Javier Barnos is Barnos. That was actually Freudian. I'm glad we caught that.
Such
but
a
now
Freudian
we're doing
slip.
It. It looks like Javier Barnos is about to snort little Josh Brolin up his nostril in the movie. That is the truth of that movie.
That
poster.
Is going to stay with him forever.
Yeah. The plot is really a drug deal gone wrong between a cartel and some other buyer. And Leland Moss, kind of a backcountry welding hunter.
Yeah, he's a welder. That's
he's a welder.
He's, you're right.
Is just doing some hunting and falls and stumbles into, like, Alice in Wonderland level, the remnants of this drug deal gone wrong with a bunch of dead people surrounded by, you know, a bunch of cocaine in a truck.
Or is it cocaine or is it something else?
Maybe H, I don't know.
I'm not sure
opium.
What it is.
It looks like drugs.
I just feel like in that part of the world, probably H. Who knows?
Isn't it Texas?
It is Texas.
Yeah. Could be either.
To be fair, you're right.
Yeah,
could be
it's the border.
It's just in a brown paper.
It's
like
in
a brown
yeah, they don't cut it up. We don't know.
Don't know.
It's drugs.
Don't know.
He stumbles upon this. He investigates, kind of realizes he's got street smarts. He realizes what this probably is. Sees a lone survivor who kind of asks him for agua. And he's like, I ain't got no water. Tracks down the honcho that basically won the gunfight, but didn't really win because he was also dead, and finds a big bag of money. Basically $2 million. No one else. He's the first on the crime, seen in the crime. No one else knows. So he takes it. And we really just follow him as he tries to get away with stealing this money, where the cartel and the other buyer have kind of contracted an individual, Javier Bardem. Bardem? Is that how I say his name?
No, it's Barnos.
Barnos. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, mate. to track down the money. And it's like a game of cat and mouse between this hitman himself and eventually another hitman sent into really control. We're doing no spoilers.
He's full spoilers. Yeah, he does a really bad job of being a hitman, a return hitman, just Woody Harrelson. Like,
we'll get
zero,
we'll
absolutely
get
zero interest.
Good,
like, just
good,
you know,
fun, a good character, but not
liked,
a great hitman.
Liked him as his character.
And we follow them trying to get away with this crime that kind of leads into, which initially seems like a victimless crime, but balloons into plenty of victims.
Plenty, absolutely. So the thing I find about
And there's also Tommy Lee Jones, the sheriff, out of his
oh
death.
Yeah, he's sort of that as well.
He's in there trying to solve the mystery.
He's narrating a completely different film in this.
he's narrating his life. He's like,
he's narrating No Country for Old Men, and they're off having a grand old time shooting shit out of people
and
killing.
Kind of the point. He's a man out of his time.
Yeah, and he's out of his depth. And that's what I kind of liked about that character. The thing, right. Let me just start you. You're going to say, no, why don't you like this? I didn't love it, right? I'm going to start with that. But I did love the fact that everything holds up in this. The plot's good, the acting, the ideas, the escalation of the violence was super compelling. I liked that at no point did they really explain Javier Bardem's. He's just a psycho.
He's a symbol. And he's a symbol.
Yeah,
he's
right?
He's symbolic.
It's amazing. Yeah. I really like that. The world felt really lived in. I just didn't care for it that much. Like, it was,
but why?
There's just absolutely no reason for this. It's one of those films where, like, I have no reason not to have not liked it, but it just didn't connect with me.
So you didn't enjoy watching it?
I enjoyed the bits that Javier Bardem was in. The rest of it I found really dull.
Okay, he's in a lot. So you didn't like Josh Brolin?
He was fine. He was absolutely fine, but there was nothing that connected to him. He wasn't like a good guy, so I wasn't rooting for him. He'd stolen a bunch of money. He'd let a couple of people die along the way. He was just being hunted.
That's the gray of it. I like that he didn't do anything wrong, but also I like him as a representation of like the common man. Like there's a lot of tough decisions you have to make with a bunch of shit out of your control that you don't really understand.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's kind of a symbol of that.
And like, it's totally fine for you to love this film, but like, you got to respect my decision too. It just didn't connect with me. Like, what's interesting is going off the back of watching something like Dune, where it is just so amazing and you are just sitting in these shots that last for 45 minutes and you're just like, this shot's too long, but I love it all the same. Whereas with this, you know, it's quickly cut together. Like, he shuts the door, he gets out of the car. And I was like,
Dune to a fucking Western?
It's what is in my brain right now.
It's like an epic sci-fi space opera to a minimalist Western.
Like, cinematography and world building wise, it didn't grab me. And it's 2007, right? So of course it's a little older, but it just didn't grab me.
Yeah, I don't think that's a fair comparison, to be honest. But
there was a lot to like about it, and I'll absolutely agree
with
that.
Fair enough. I obviously feel differently. I think it's a minimalist movie by design, which Dune is not. It's kind of
the first one was.
Well, it was still, there's minimal plot, but there was still like massive scene.
I think the more I think about Dune 2,
Vista.
And we're not going to talk about Dune 2,
they're
apologies.
They're kind of one movie, honestly.
The thing I think I liked most about it, and you talked last week a lot about the fact that there isn't a lot of dialogue, there isn't a lot of storytelling. Denis Villeneuve does so much with his visual storytelling, just makes it so compelling, whereas this didn't compel me in the same way. I did love the fact that no one knew from, you know, Hicksville, knew how to say Anton Chigurh's name and called him Sugar.
Sugar.
That got me every time he said it. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
This guy. But the relentless stalking nature of Chigurh was just like, it was really good. I liked what they did with that
character. And he has quite a bit of dialogue for for the character you think he is. Yeah. He gets quite a bit of like times to like have conversations with random people.
Yeah.
You get a lot of insight into how he thinks,
and just despite being just an assassin, kills everyone.
Yeah, well, he does. He does not kill everyone.
Well, there's two people he doesn't kill in this film.
It's not everyone.
Which I'm wondering if that's ruining a bit of IMDb trivia for you. But like, like for the most part, if you see him, he gonna kill you.
Yeah. It's not if you see him. It's if
interact.
You go. It like he is like he represents like a intense like moral like morality is ambiguous is like a big theme. We're getting into themes already, but.
Good.
It's a big theme of this film is like the ambiguous nature of morality. Mm. And like his, to that point, his morality is like he has a tried and true code. And it doesn't matter if that code results in what you would deem as an immoral action. Mm. It's all above board. We all know what it is, truth or, you know, if you follow that truth, you know the outcome. And even in the times where he spares people, it's due to chance, not because... he doesn't spare anyone that like knowingly broke the code themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
He Absolutely. Gives a chance to spare people only due to chance, but anyone that broke his moral code, he kills. So it's not like mindless is my point.
Like you.
Yeah. I vibe with
You're a killer.
Javier Bardem in more ways than my nose.
It's a fucking performance, man. That Javier Bardem
really
performance.
Good.
Like,
he's really good.
He is terrifying in this. I think this might be the first time I'd seen him in a movie.
Did he win supporting actor?
I think he won best supporting for this, yeah.
He should have.
So this might have been the first time I'd seen him on screen. And to be honest with you, it really set like a high bar for him. He's coming off of this. He's going into the James Bond movie. You know, he becomes a star off the back of this film.
Yeah. Like, same with Brolin, I think it was his
completely,
first one.
Yeah. For such an interesting role for Brolin, because like you say, he is completely like gray. All the way through in this, as in, you know, like he does steal the money, he does let people die, but like you kind of he's the person you're supposed to root for. I find that really interesting.
I kind of like the juxtaposition of like how like a basically a victimless crime, like an immoral act, which is like by like modern society's definition, which is like him taking the money and not reporting it.
Yeah.
Like you're tempting fate. It's immoral. That guy was dying. You didn't call right away.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing that we're supposed to root for. But an immoral act is like kind of what condemns him, because him taking the money is what ends up like having Javier Bardem's character chase him.
Yep.
But a moral act of coming back for the water is actually what condemns him, if that makes sense. Like, because he's caught in the act of doing the what we would deem as a moral act. So like there's a really strong theme of like the ambiguousness of morality.
Yeah, nice.
In this. I really like that. I think that like hit home well. And then obviously that Javier just represents fucking death. Like literally the trotting inevitability of death against all human control.
Just constantly stalking you down. Yeah. That's very true.
Chance of it.
The world they built here was kind of interesting too, I thought. Like it kind of gave me sort of parallels to the likes of the True Detective type show we watched the other day, where it's incredible, even though it's very bright and, you know, hot, it's very bleak. Like there's not a lot happening in these places. Like everyone knows everyone in these towns. I kind of like that.
Well, that's the other. Yeah, I would say that's the other. It's like the changing West.
Yeah.
It's like.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like how is this small little, you know, town supposed to deal with the power of a drug cartel?
Yeah.
Like how is this small town sheriff, which was like totally cool in the West of before.
He doesn't at all.
Gonna like supposed to deal with like basically a drug empire. They can't.
Yeah.
And it's like, so it's like an investigation of that, I think, as well.
Yeah, I really like that. Yeah. And it is that exactly, like they're having to leave behind the simpler times and the modern society is like creeping into them, creeping into the, you know, all
the
around
effects
them.
Of modern society.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Drugs. You're not necessarily seeing, you know, like fucking skyscrapers or anything, but you're absolutely right. Like what's happening in the world around them is it's on their doorstep, you know, like they should get moving or get off, you know? Yeah.
I really like the subtle way too that like they set up the themes. Like you basically determine you're informed about Javier Bardem's character mostly through the first interaction he has with that guy at the gas station, where every time that guy says something that's kind of like colloquial or like, you know, not clear, or just trying to ambiguous or avoiding the truth, he calls him out and makes him say the truth.
Yeah. Right.
Like, oh no, like you inherited it. You took over. You didn't take over. You were gifted it through marriage.
Yep.
And he's like, that's how you want to call it. Like he doesn't do euphemisms.
Good
like, accent. He's like a dude. He is literally straight to the truth, the matter, or his truth.
Mm.
And that kind of defines how he interacts with everyone, all the way up to the point where he even kills his employer for employing someone else instead of backing, like saying, hey, you asked me to do this job. I agreed. Now you're stopping me from doing it.
Yeah,
let me do the job. You won't. I kill you then.
He almost has more moral code than everyone else.
Well,
in
he
the
has
whole
a.
Film.
It's it's uncompromised.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Which is like I like how they inform like the message about that theme through really subtle ways.
I was going to call it out later on when we get to like action and whatnot, but that scene where he goes in and kills his manager is brilliant. I honestly was part of me was expecting it to turn full RoboCop. And you know, like at the end of RoboCop, when the guy gets pushed out the window and he's got the fake arms. I was honestly expecting that to happen. But then I was like, he just comes in and just like absolutely.
And the guy's just
it.
Like, I'm in accounting.
Yeah. I think the thing that's most interesting about.
Likely story, bro.
Yeah. I think the thing that's most interesting about Chagrin the whole way through is that he's so prepared for everything, like absolutely everything.
Well, he just knows what to do.
At all times.
The way death knows what to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always kills. Like,
the air pump thing he has that just pushes out the door, like the locks to the doors.
Yeah.
Just what a fascinating. Well,
it's a cow killer, right?
Yeah.
That's what they decided.
That's right.
They talk about how that's how they kill cows midway through after you've seen it kill a bunch of people. And I think that's also like, I love this because it's so subtle.
Yeah.
Like it's like, that's also a message about like.
How he feels about humanity.
True.
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed. Yeah. Like the people that like his code is this way. Most people's code is just sheep.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
You know, and cow.
Follow the.
I think it's that. And I think it's also like a nod to just like, hey, no matter what humans try and do, like the greater theme of if he's an illusion for the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Like the greater theme of like, you can all pretend you're a higher power, but at the end of the day, everyone dies. Just
everyone
like
dies
cows.
The same.
Just like a herding. Like, I just think there's a lot of really cool, subtle messages that like, were executed, because it's a book. It's Cormac McCarthy. Yeah. Like, I think that they adapted it extremely well.
That's actually really interesting, the Grim Reaper themes you mentioned there, because for the most part, to the police at least, he's effectively a ghost. Like, they don't even get a...
Motherfucker never leaves the Denny's, bro. Right? You're not going to find him under the butter in your pancake, brother.
That's so true.
He never leaves.
He's living in the right place. Right, that
motherfucker loves a grand slam.
He does love
after
that.
After watching that, I've been craving pancakes.
Oh man, yeah.
And I cannot. You
my
know
birthday's coming up soon, buddy.
Should we go back
for my birthday? We're going.
I'm fucking.
You've only
got
to wait 2 months, buddy.
Dude, I haven't had a pancake in a while.
For my birthday. So for anyone who doesn't know this, anyone new to the podcast, every year for my birthday, we've got effectively. Like, I'm a bit of a gym guy. Let's say that I love going to the gym. What can I say? And I restrict myself from eating certain things throughout the year. I don't eat like pancakes. Don't eat a lot of bacon anymore, which is hard to say out loud. So every year on my birthday, we go, we have this ritual. It's like,
it's very good.
It's amazing. We go to this place called Haberfield's Haberdashery.
Yeah. I can't talk about it right now because I'm so hungry.
It's the best. You can get pancakes there. You get like little egg McMuffin thing. Oh my God, it's amazing.
And I tweaked my back this week, so I haven't been able to gym. So I have to like really watch what I eat. So like, I'm just like, now that you're talking about this, I'm like, I want to order late night pancakes.
Right now.
Could you even get them here? Probably not.
I wonder. It's probably a great question. Good ones. Don't look, because that could then happen. We could be both eating pancakes on the podcast. But you're absolutely right. The fact that he is this, you know, creeping specter almost that's in the background. Yeah. He's a ghost. And to the police, effectively, who don't get off their asses in these towns, according to the movie anyway, like, they just would, they never catch, they barely even know he exists.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
And I will say, Josh Brolin, valiant effort against
good
the
effort.
Grim Reaper.
Solid effort.
Like, he, for the most part, I mean, like, I keep thinking, like, would you have checked the bag for a transponder?
Yeah, I would have, personally.
You think you would have, but you're also, like, so fucking shocked from just surviving.
Yeah.
That you're like, all right, let's get out of here. And like, you know, it's like, it was well hidden.
So it's a bit of context around this. Yeah. What happens is when Josh Brolin takes the bag of money, it's like $2 million, as Dre says. He keeps running to the next town and the next town. But
after
this,
the first time you would.
This guy just finds him somehow. And it turns out that there's a transponder in there. And there's a really cool scene when Anton pulls up outside the motel he's shacked up in. And he's beep, and he just keeps rolling forward in the car. Just gradually finds the right one. Then it reverses a little bit. And he starts... So good. I really and like that, but that creeping sense of him and the terror from him, it's almost got horror vibes to it. And I really liked how that was sprinkled through the movie. So for example,
reminds me of Resident Evil 2.
Yeah, the prime example of this is when he's in like a motel and he's on like the middle floor. He hears Anton killing the guy, the bellhop basically downstairs, and you see his foot, his like shadow stop outside the room. And you know, Josh Brolin sat there with the massive shotgun.
By the way, surely you go to the side on the ground.
Right.
Like, of why course. Are you standing in front of the door?
That was, I mean, I think we're talking more about the character there, you know what I mean?
That was just a side.
He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But effectively waiting for this Anton to, and then one of my favorite action scenes in the movie actually interestingly happens there, where they're in the street and they're having a shootout effectively.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah.
It's amazing. But second question for you, he finds that, so what happens is Josh Brolin finds the transponder, which is drawing Javier Bardem to him. He finds that, right? Now, you tell me, if you had the opportunity to just lob that out the window, which he did, he had at least 2 minutes before Anton got to him, would you not just lob it out the window?
I think it's kind of too late because he's already found him. You know, he already knows that he's there. Then so at that point, he's like, well,
he knows he was there,
the
but he would not room his in, so he'd have more time to find an escape route, right?
Maybe. Maybe he already heard it beeping and he knows it's up there. And then suddenly it stops. He's like, okay, the guy's either moved or he's thrown it out.
Well, then, but then he still has not room his in, so he's got more time to play with. So Anton's got to go through every single room to find
it. You're right. I mean, also, wouldn't you looked for a transponder just found you randomly?
I mean,
the exact room.
Right.
Like, I get, but steel manning it, like, maybe you can suspend your disbelief and just be like, okay, he's just been checking every motel.
Sure.
I didn't get that far. But still, at that point, I dump the money into my bag and I search, either way. Less thing to carry. You know what I mean? Like,
I do think I would have checked the money. Like, the first thing I probably would have done would have checked the money.
Well, now I will, when this happens.
When we're in Texas next.
Yeah, whenever I stumble upon $2 million and a fucking bunch of dead cartel members. Yeah.
Straight away. Yeah. Let's find this transponder. Another thing I found a little frustrating about this film was Tommy Lee Jones is just like voiceovers in this, where he's just
kind of like
musing about life and like the old west. And I was like, don't get me wrong, I got it. It worked tonally with the movie, but after a while, I was like, I don't need to hear another one of these.
Well, I'm also like, the frustrating part is like, that he was so impotent.
So impotent.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like one thing to like barely involved in the struggle. Like, it's one thing to have the struggle and to have that message and we get the message. But for them to, for the guy to like basically do nothing about it
the whole way through.
Like, and it's not that he's eventually he's late, right? He like try, he doesn't do nothing, but like it amounts to basically nothing. Even like, it'd be cool if like the money, someone got the money, you know, like because of something he did on accident. But like literally, he's just late.
He's just useless.
He's just late.
Even when he turns up at the end to go back and check the hotel room. So basically the ending of the movie, we're skipping around here, but the end of the movie is that Javier Bardem just has the balls to walk back into the hotel room where he's just killed a bunch of people, take the money and go.
Yeah.
He walks into the hotel room where Javier Bardem, I forget what we called him. He's hiding.
Yeah.
And I even feel like there's a bit of that where he kind of realizes that he's probably hiding. He gets like the bristles on the back of his neck, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he just still does nothing. Still does nothing. But to be fair, the most useless sheriff I've ever seen.
I agree. I don't think Bardem was the one that killed those people.
Bardem? which one is it?
Barnose.
Is it his dome or his nose? Well,
to be fair, they're both, you know, average in size. Bardem.
Bacronium.
Barchrome. Bardem. Barnum?
What are the
What
other?
Is his real name?
Bardem.
Bardem.
You gotta say Bardem.
Bardem. I don't think he was the one that killed the people there. It was the cartel. Because they were the cartel was also chasing after this.
Right. But he still had the balls to walk straight into the crime scene. Yeah, with
very true.
Zero fucks given. I liked some of the tics that he had as well. So like one of the interesting like tidbits about Javier Bardem's character was he didn't like, for example, getting blood on him or getting any mess with the millions of people he was killing. So, for example, there's a great bit where there's a guy in the shower who he just finds at the end, and he just like pulls the shower curtain just across a little bit before shooting.
The guy's like, "Please don't kill me." He goes,
"It's so good."
That silent shotgun is fucking wild,
brutal,
wild,
absolutely brutal. The silencer itself was pretty
innovative. Like, I've never seen something like
that. It must be like custom made.
Well, it is, but like my point is like imagery wise, like I don't think I've seen that in any kind of movie or anything before.
It's quite striking.
Yeah.
It's like you can really pick him out for the
game. Yeah, you gonna die. we haven't talked at all about what's her name? She's in a bunch of stuff.
You mean Kelly MacDonald?
Kelly MacDonald playing Cara
Jean Moss.
I actually really liked her performance.
I thought she was great.
Yeah.
She played like a juxtaposition. A
Southern Belle.
Yeah. To, you know, either Javier Bardem or Josh Brolin. So she was married to Josh Brolin in this.
Yeah.
And her mom was hilarious, by the way.
Yeah.
Just the classic.
I wish she was in it more.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
But she almost feels like she's ripped right out of like a Bad Boys movie. You know what I mean? Just chucked into this.
It was
like
funny.
And
I got the cancer.
And I got the cancer. So, but I did like that, you know, that sort of little flower growing in the desert imagery almost, you know, from this character. And at the same, I mean, like the whole point of this is like, does he kill her at the end or not? Like, of course he kills her at the end.
For sure, I think he kills
her.
I thought that was pretty, like people make, or like, I didn't realize that was supposed to be ambiguous. But I thought like pretty clearly he has a code, and if you know his code.
I reckon he sticks to his code.
Yeah, I reckon he kills her.
Which is, you know, like, it's sad for, because she is, you know, like she's effectively innocent in all of this.
But the question is, if you follow the code to the nth degree, when they're like not directly the one that broke the code and made the action happen, he gives them the coin. She just said, you don't get to do that. You don't get to put it on the coin. Mm. Does that challenge his code enough? Because if he kills her, he realizes I am making the decision. It's not chance. That I think the argument for her not being dead is that she challenged the code in a way that he hadn't.
I just don't think he's got that many morals. I think he's a psychopath.
I think she's probably dead. I like though that she had agency in the end.
Yeah,
like she chooses to help him or to try to help her husband.
Well, yeah, okay. And one thing, let's go back to Josh Brolin. Is the thing we talked about a little bit before we started was the fact that he kind of dies off screen at the end, and it was really jarring for me because this film has absolutely no problem in showing gore or violence or someone getting shot.
Yeah.
So, Javier Bardem walking in and like massacring like a bunch of people. Absolutely no issues with that. And then all of a sudden, like the like secondary lead of the film almost in Josh Brolin, like you walk into the room and he's on the floor dead. You're like, why do we get all these petty drug dealers?
That's intentional. Because it's like the common man theme. Like this guy represents the common man can die without anyone even knowing without it. Like, you think this is the protagonist, but he represents the cook, Call My Man.
You think it's John David Washington from Tenet?
Yeah. The protagonist.
I get that. And I like that. I just feel like it was a bit anticlimactic for that character. I feel like I would have liked to have known, you know, was it Javier who killed him, or was it, you know, the cartel, or were they all together?
I think it was the cartel. Sure. That was implied because they're fleeing the scene.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's less interesting in my opinion. I feel like the evil specter should have caught up to him.
Well, I think, like, again, this is a film that's like really tied to its themes. Sure. And it's saying yeah, you think it's going to be that, but in the end, it's just chance.
Yeah. Okay.
Like the grandma told the cartel guy when she was helping with the luggage, where they were staying and why, like, did. At the end of the day, that's what does it.
My favorite bit of this whole film, though, I've got to come back to this, is Woody Harrelson. What a random character. He gets hired to take out Anton. He comes in. He does absolutely nothing other than lead Anton.
Well, no, he finds
Anton to him and the money.
Yeah, well, he finds the money, remember?
Yeah. Sees it over the fence.
So he's like resourceful, but like he talked a big game and then got like instantly flummoxed.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Without hesitation.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, I kind of like that idea that even he, who came across as, you know, Billy Big Bollocks, can't save himself against, you know, death. It's a great little, it's almost a cameo.
How about like the part where he should know when he just wakes up and he's like, medical. And they're just like,
just staring at it.
Yeah, and he's just like, is that like
help?
Why would that, like, what I didn't understand response? Is why they were doing that anyway.
Yeah.
Like, even if he wasn't injured, like, even if he's just a drunk guy, like, that guy's not, like, giving you any value. Like, I don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Amazing. Yeah. Look, I don't know why it didn't capture me the way it captured a lot of audiences. Like, it is a good film, and there's a lot to it. And I think some of the tones and themes which we're going to mention here, you know, they're really poignant, and that's great. It was long. And I feel like I checked out at times.
It wasn't even that long.
Talk to me then about the tones and or themes of this.
How far? Ooh, somebody just upped their rating on IMDb. It went through 1,401 while I was watching. That's crazy that they do that live. Sorry.
It's mad you're watching
it. I digress.
What are your tones and themes, DL?
I talked a lot about them, so I don't want to bludgeon our audience. But the changing West, morality is ambiguous. I would say there's probably another theme of...
I had greed.
Yeah, greed.
Because, like, at the end of the day, you know, Josh Brolin still tries to keep the money for himself. He could have handed it over to the police, even though they're useless and would have probably all died. But, like...
Well, I guess, like, the temptation and greed.
Yeah, exactly.
Result of it. Yeah. But those are the big ones, I would say. And we've kind of covered them. But I will digress. How about the action, the coolest scene is the one in the streets, I would say.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Like, that sequence... with the where he's just driving and the car just gets
I just got a flash of over my phone to check a note, and I just got a flash of Roger Boyce's goofy IMDb picture. That's such a weird shot.
It's ridiculous.
It's just an obvious. All right,
like,
then.
Why though?
Give me three best and three worst, my dude.
Only 2 hours and 2 minutes. Not terrible.
Well, it felt long. There's a difference. Yeah.
What I will say is, for three best, I really enjoyed the opening scene.
Okay, yeah.
Where you just discover, and you're like, okay, well, this is the inciting incident. Like, this is clear. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, what's happening?
The way it gradually builds.
Then he kind of like, you kind of figure out what he's doing as he figures out he's going to do it.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you can tell it's not a conscious choice, but he like is...
There's a lot of gradual building in this film that really like amps up, whether it's the horror or the action.
Like, as you're discovering what's happening, he's discovering that he's going to go... He's a step ahead of you.
Yeah.
And he's going to look for the fucking money.
Yeah.
I love the tension build, obviously, with Javier Bardem. We've talked a bunch about it.
I've got that too.
And then Kelly McDonald, actually really liked her performance.
Yeah,
she was a highlight.
She was in a UK show I watched recently called Line of Duty, which is really well renowned in the UK.
Big Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
Actress as well.
So I've got one thing that we didn't talk about, which is the practical effects. So there is a bit when Javier Bardem gets shot in the leg.
Yeah.
And... oh, it's so grim. It was really hard to watch. Like, he basically, zero fucks given, just injects himself with a bunch of painkiller.
Yeah.
And then pulls out all this shrapnel.
And there's just like a hole in his leg.
And it's, oh my God, it's fucking hard to watch. And the broken arm at the end. Where
the guy's arm gets shot off.
Oh my God. Yeah. One thing we didn't mention was the ending of this, where Anton Chigrin, he's in a car accident effectively. So Chance again.
Yeah.
gets up and walks away with like half an arm.
His arm is fully broken.
Unreal. I also had, like I said, the tension with Anton Chigrin, but like the more gradual build of that, like I loved how he was just layered into every aspect of the movie. His massive nose, not kidding, his massive presence just felt all the way through. And then I just had surprise Woody Harrelson. He was just kind of there.
Surprise!
Yeah, exactly. He was there, then he was gone. What about worst?
For me, it's just not necessarily a happy film.
Yeah, you're not going to watch this.
There's really no hopeful message.
In the slightest.
Like, at all. Like, I couldn't come up with one.
Like, none of it.
Like, maybe the granny survived, but we don't know.
I hope she didn't. She got the cancer.
Well, I guess what's-his-name retires, but then he's still haunted by his inability in that whole dream sequence that we're talking about, Tommy Lee Jones' character. He does retire. He decides, I ain't up for this no mo. And yeah, I don't. That's all I had because I like this movie.
I had. You can felt too slow.
You can have two more.
It felt Oscar baity, and just that there's just not enough Mark Wahlberg in this film. I can't believe you didn't have that in yours.
I don't know what he'd do.
I feel like he'd have been great in this.
I don't
you
know.
Just imagine him as like
Boston accent.
He could have done the granny character. He would have been great.
Like a Missy Doubtfire situation. Yeah. I could see that.
I got the cancer.
I got no. What would the Boston accent cancer? I got the cancer. It's in my arm.
Cancer.
I got the arm cancer.
It would have been great to just have him as like, I don't know, maybe, you know, when Javier Bardem goes in and he talks to like the gas clerk or whatever.
Yeah.
I just want that to be Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, no.
Out of nowhere. All right. Quickly then. Can you guess for me the IMDb scoff list? I'm sure you've just looked at
it. I did because I just saw the reviews. It's 8.2 or something.
It is 8.2. Yeah. What do you think about Rotten Tomatoes?
89.
93.
Ooh, I was going to say 92.
And finally, my favorite, Letterboxd, which is all user scores and is always 3.6, but it's never 3.6.
3.8.
It is 4.3.
I keep going for 3.8, but I need to trust my gut.
You got to trust it, man. You got to be in there. And now finally, our rating system, which as always is this better or worse? The most average movie we know, which as of right now is Aquaman 2018. DL, is it better and worse?
Look, I mean, it's pretty clear how I feel about this. Yeah. If you say this is worse than Aquaman, clearly, I'm going to be shocked. It is better than Aquaman.
I really like, not kidding, this is clearly better than Aquaman 2018. We're talking context here.
Yes.
I'm not saying this is a bad film. I'm saying I didn't love it as much as other people did.
Understand, it's not up your alley.
It's not my jam.
That being said,
totally fine.
If you said it was worse than Aquaman 18, that would have been a shock.
That would have been
because that would mean you'd totally rather have spent two and a half hours watching those shitty special effects and what's his name in wet jeans than.
Ooh, I'm gonna take it back. I want to see the wet.
Yeah, I knew I would get you. I knew I would get you.
All right, trivia, true or false?
Sure,
let's do this. All right, according to a January 2018 Business Insider article, a group of psychiatrists studied 400 movies and identified 126 psychopathic characters. True, or is that false?
True.
It is true. They chose Javier Bardem's portrayal of Anton Chigrin as the most clinically accurate portrayal of a psychopath.
Yikes.
Fascinating. Fascinating, fascinating. Well, okay. True or false, DL?
Yeah.
Javier Bardem met real-life serial killer Gary Ridgway, dubbed the Green River Killer, in an attempt study his character. Is that true or is that false?
False. He didn't meet him. He watched videos of him. I'm making that up. I'm just kidding.
I actually made up the whole thing. Okay. Bardem did spend time studying the novel for the film it was based on, as well as real life psychopaths and hitmen, sociopaths and hitmen, but didn't actually meet any for the film.
Got it.
But the Ridgway Killer is a real, Green River Killer is a real killer. I just decided to make a nice fancy one for you.
You felt like you wanted a Google. I did. Couple serial killers, yeah.
True or false, DL? When directors Joel Cohen and Ethan Cohen approached Javier Bardem about playing Chigrin, he said, I don't drive, I speak bad English, and I hate violence. Is that true or false?
True.
It is true. Yeah. The Coens responded, that's why we called you.
I love that. That's why your profession is called acting.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, finally then, trivia true or trivia false? Carly Jean is the only character to talk to all three of the main characters. True or is that false?
The main characters being Tommy Lee Jones, Javier Bardem, and Javier Big Nose, and Josh Brolin. Who else would have talked to all three? Tommy Lee Jones doesn't. I think that's true.
It is true. Good on you. I think you got at least some out of five there. So
yeah, some.
Good work, DL.
Thanks, man.
And thank you all very much for sticking with it. We really, really appreciate it. We thank you for giving us 5 stars in your podcast capture of choice. You can do it right there. Helps with algorithms things. Thank you so much. DL, yes. Do you want to wrap up the show?
Of course I do.
Where can they find us, buddy?
They can find us at thepodcastassemble@gmail.com or podcastassemble on Instagram. We also have a YouTube channel, which Tommy posted a video on recently. It's a good one. Ooh. It's a good little art taste over here.
Ooh, thank you.
His video editing skills have gotten much better, I must say.
They needed to.
A big thank you to Matthew Bliss for editing this week's podcast and mastering. He did both. If you'd like to be a part of your podcasting team, bring him in. Free agent. Get in touch on...
Well, he's not free. Well, yeah, but he is a free agent,
meaning like he is waiting for your bid.
He's waiting for you, baby.
Business at mbpod.com or head to mbpod.com to find out more about his services. If you want to hear his work, listen to From My Home to Yours, an expat repat podcast where Matt and his wife share their experiences and advice for others moving to Ireland from Australia or really anywhere.
Very wholesome experience. You should check him out, guys. He has a calming, soothing voice.
He does.
Just what you need when you're moving countries. You should check out his podcasting and his podcasting skills. Thank you all for sticking with it.
Until next time.
Tally-ho!
Tally-ho! Laters, gators!